Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. He made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of this.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Mike, what parts of the David Sampson conversation, because he's a content fountain and we tell you all the time, I understand that many of you in Miami don't like this alliance very much, that David Sampson is unusual in terms of the amount of information that he can give you where you learn about business. You get information you're not going to hear anywhere else. So some of the stories he told about Joe Girardi were jarring, but what was the part of the conversation with David Sampson that echoed for you, Mike?
It's always impressive when you can have David Sampson pause and really think about what he's going to say, because he throws caution in the wind sometimes. He holds no punches back. And we made David Sampson at a loss for words because he was sort of taken aback at a question that we asked. We asked about certain family dynamics and how they presented themselves in the workplace, and his answer was really good and revelatory, and you should check it out, The Local Hour. It's available now.
I talked, Billy, after you and I had that conversation, I talked with the Marlins because I'd like to start getting some people from the Marlins on, and I simply assume that our issues with getting Marlins on don't even have anything to do with what we do on the show. I'm thinking, and I understand why this is so, that they don't like that we're giving David Sampson a platform, because the platform ends up being something that is rarely favorable to the Marlins. You can say he's a disgruntled or bitter ex-employee. You can wonder, if you're a franchise in this market or any market, why a radio show would give a platform consistently to a bitter, or what can sound like a bitter ex-employee. But we've had this relationship for a long time, and it's always produced interesting content for the audience.
Which is really, I mean, all we care about we care about David. I know you become very, very friendly with him, but if the content wasn't good, he wouldn't be on with us every week. His content is exceptional.
He's sort of the opposite of Cody that way.
Right. Well, but why don't the Marlins take the opportunity? I mean, would you take Derek Jeter and talk to him on a weekly or biweekly basis?
I would talk to a lot of people involved with that team and that story, and tried to at the end of last season, and we didn't get anybody.
They shouldn't care that David Sampson has a platform here. We have offered them a platform here, so they can have the same type of platform if they want. Their concern should not be about David Sampson. I'm sorry.
What are your thoughts on this, Billy? Because Stugatz,
I don't think it's going to happen.
Stugatz,
just from conversations I've had with them, I don't see it happening.
And how is your relationship with them? Is it good? Are you getting free stuff?
I'm not. I mean, what does that mean?
Are you getting free stuff?
Are you getting
not getting free stuff.
Access?
Thanks for clearing that up, Stugatz.
Yep. In case Billy didn't hear it the first time.
I'm just wondering if the relationship is bearing Marlins fruit for you personally as opposed to
professionally. No, it's not. It's bearing headaches. I go and I ask them, can we get this person on? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay, well, we'll talk again in a couple weeks when we try to get someone else.
Oh, that sucks. I mean, you're such a big fan. I mean, you want Marlin players on. Dan makes it so difficult for you.
Billy, why did I offend you on the free stuff front? I mean, you're a fan of the team. We have a
mailing. You make it seem like I'm getting paid by them under the table to, you know, support them. That's not what's going on.
Why?
Well, there's that. Stugatz would go the route of befriending them to get free access or whatnot, but I was just asking you, I don't know, are you applying a journalistic sensibility to your relationship with the Marlins?
My relationship is essentially, hey, can we get this person on? They're like, we'll think about it. And then the thought, I guess, never comes to an end and the person doesn't come on.
Billy, I want to talk to you about this, what happened yesterday, because I feel like you haven't been the same since Iron Eagle was cruel. And then Iron Eagle, in a very Billy move, texts Mike Ryan sort of apologizing for
being... Didn't text me to apologize.
Right, he owes you an apology. I listened back to it, and while it was funny, and I laughed, and Iron Eagle was not good, he was great, okay? Man, did he pile on Billy. Like, he went on for minutes.
I don't think
Billy.
We help matters there by laughing at the stand-up comic routine and sort of feeding him in a way that created more problems for Billy. And I just don't
think... It just seems to be an Iron Eagle thing. You know, he berates me. He berates flight attendants who don't give him his ticket on time because they can't say his weird name the right way. It just seems to be more of an Iron Eagle thing.
Chris, how did you experience... Do you agree with my hypothesis that Billy hasn't quite been the same in the last 24 hours?
Well, I mean, I think it would rattle anybody if Iron Eagle just came after you. I mean... I would be having nightmares about it.
I called Billy after the show just to check in to make sure if he was okay. I mean, like, he had just fought in a fight, you know?
It was a bit of a surprise. I guess we all underestimated Iron Eagle in every way, because Chris is right. What are you going to do if you're just standing there and you're like, let's do this Iron Eagle conversation, and next thing you know, there's a pit bull gnawing on your balls. Like, you were not expecting all of a sudden for that guy to bare his teeth and come after anybody.
For no reason, also. I mean, what did I do to him? Jeez.
Just pronounced a single word.
A single letter in a word.
That's huge.
Dude, and listening back to it, Stugatz absolutely skated with whatever the hell that was at the end of that interview.
You noticed.
Oh, my God. Stand-up comedian. My God, you were so bad at the end.
I was terrible.
Explain.
Thanks for keeping it in, by the way. I appreciate that, Tony.
All right. Let's rewind here for a moment, because I want to go back to the days that Stugatz and I were most haunted by him leading the show and me in the passenger car.
I will say this, Dan. You and I, moving forward, have to be aware of Tony, because he will not take the embarrassing moments out. He will leave them in.
What do you mean we got to be aware? I know.
He's making us look worse. I mean,
wait, Stugatz.
And he's delighting in it.
You feel like I don't know this. First of all, my dream for Highly Questionable, and we've only gotten there recently, as soon as I'm out the door, my dream has always been for the television show to have a personality that absolutely mocks the seriousness of the people inside the box. Like, that's what I've always wanted the show to be, sort of a filming of a brainstorming session on people who talk about sports, with the show itself having the winning personality that defeats everybody, because you never know when you're on air, you never know when you're going to be embarrassed, all of that. But I want to go back to the beginning with you and when we were doing the show and both of us were altered by it, because I felt some of that yesterday. You were given the assignment of you handle the Iron Eagle interview. And I spent the entire interview watching you try to do what you've gotten used to over stupidity and the years, which is figure out a way to throw it to somebody else to handle your work.
Right.
Like, you didn't want the responsibility just leading the segment.
No, this is a shared community. What I try to do in these situations, especially on Zoom, is just have the guy pop in and we just start talking and having a conversation. A couple of mensches cutting it up. And if Chris wants to say something, so be it. And if Roy wants to chime in, fantastic. And if Billy wants to mispronounce a word, so be it. If Tony wants to laugh at that, I'm fine with it. If Mike wants to get involved or doesn't want to get involved, it doesn't matter to me. It's just a free-flowing conversation.
Can I get a ruling here?
And it seemed to work out pretty well
yesterday.
It did.
I can't dispute that it worked out exceptionally well, as does your entire life as a person who outsources all of his work.
It's worked out great.
It really has. So I want the assessment of the group here. I want the assessment, because the best thing we did yesterday was that Iron Eagle interview. And you guys did it. You followed something to its conclusion. You built something up. And it was a masterful dismount at the end. But did you guys notice that Stugatz kept sort of trying to get everyone else to do the work? Because I couldn't...
Well, I look at it as getting everyone else involved. That's how I look at it.
It is a good way to look at it. I feel like we generally tend to do that as a show.
You're initiating offense.
Yes, exactly, Mike.
How selfless of you.
Thank you.
So you were not being lazy yesterday. It was not laziness. It was not.
I feel like this is a topic and something that all of us created. Not just me. It was me, Mike, Chris, Roy, Billy, Tony. We had a, you know, we had a moment where you were out during the big suey. We were talking about Ian Eagle. We were talking about Jack. And I felt like we should all be involved with Ian once he actually made it to the show. That's all. That's how I felt. That's how I was trying to do it.
Generosity of spirit.
I'm not saying I pulled it off well. I'm
sharing. You did pull it off well. I just disagree that you got the result. You certainly did. It means to an end, and you got the end. I just don't think you say what you means. Like, the means here, I don't believe, is the same as you do.
He did it during that interview. He does it during the post-game show a lot. Anytime Stugatz is real interested in what I have to think about a topic, I'm just like, okay, is this him just trying to make me talk, or does he actually care what I think?
I'm just trying to help you guys out. That's all, man.
This has been something, and you've got to marvel at it if you've been with us since the beginning, because Wake and Take is born. Stugatz will always double down on the lazy in a way that is aggressive and is almost always rewarded. So you can't really, he's been trained. Yeah. Listen, how far back are we going where I would leave? I don't even remember what it was. My day was too long and I had to leave at 6 p.m. for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And the last hour,
the last hour
was Stugatz handling it. And as I drove home, it was always Stugatz just asking Mike questions, falling back into the same thing that we were doing at the beginning when the show was terrible, which is just Stugatz asking me questions.
Three and only three. If you went to the grocery store, can only purchase three and only three items. Which three items would you purchase?
Oddly enough, a ratings bonanza that final hour. Let's kick it back to a little way back machine to yesterday's Big Suey when Stugatz asked one of his few questions of Ian Eagle. This is how it went.
Listen, you were tremendous. I'm not certain you should have pursued. You shouldn't have pursued a career in stand-up broadcast, stand-up comedian, because you're very, very funny. Yep. Thanks for taking that out, Tone. Appreciate it. Were you celebrating that? Jesus, you handsome devil.
I didn't even know idea how he could fix that.
It's impossible.
We need to get a different person to be speaking in order for... Listen to that again. What are you saying?
I don't know. Listen, you were tremendous. I'm not certain you should have pursued... You shouldn't have pursued a career in stand-up broadcast, stand-up comedian, because you're very, very funny.
I have no idea how to edit that.
I got caught up, man. There's a lot of windows, a lot of people, and again, I'm trying to keep everyone involved, man.
I'm not sure you should have, you shouldn't have pursued a career in stand-up comedian. There's no way to fix that.
No, you're right.
And also, though, as an added bonus, I want you to listen to this because it's not as if his voice isn't just phlegmy and diseased. I want you to just listen to this without concentrating on the stumbling around for the simple, terrible fatigue in his voice.
Listen, you were tremendous. I'm not certain you should have pursued. You shouldn't have pursued a career in stand-up broadcast, stand-up comedian, because you're very, very funny. I'm telling you. Well, I can hear it. Just playing out the string, Dano. I mean, I am tired, man. Whoa.
Playing out the string. I'm not sure Stugatz is totally still going to come with us now that Rinaldi's leaving and he's angling for that position. He's like, wait a minute. There's an opening at the company I want. Sports poet.
December.
Let's hear some sports poetry from Stugatz.
Listen, you were tremendous. I'm not certain you should have pursued. You shouldn't have pursued a career in stand-up broadcast, stand-up comedian, because you're very, very funny.
You put a string section under that, though, it works.
I was jarred by Rinaldi leaving.
Everyone was.
I'm shocked. I'm still shocked.
Everyone is.
I'm not certain it's true. I mean.
It felt that way.
But yes.
I was firing that text off like, hey, is this true? And they're like, what? No one caught wind of this. Shocking.
There's a certain few that I felt like they'd be at ESPN forever. And Rinaldi was one of the few. Forever.
Who's the top of the list there? Because I believe most people were surprised by that. It's an odd fit. For those of you who do not know, Andrew Marchand is reporting that Tom Rinaldi is headed to Fox to tell stories because he's a storyteller and he's a poet. And Fox does not seem like the place for storytelling poets.
Well, they're deficient in that category. And how do you boost it? By getting the GOAT, the best to ever do it.
Golf and college football are his specialties. He adds a sort of grace and romanticism and really sort of a literary lilt to what it is that he is covering, even if it's just golf, a stick and a ball, even if it's just college football, you know, Boise State against San Jose State.
He's kind of stepping on our turf now. How about, like, get your own month?
Yeah, bumped off the headlines. The Dan Le Batard Show with Stu Gatz, because Rinaldi, I didn't even know he was a free agent. Tom Rinaldi, anyone that's ever worked with him will tell you, not is he just like an absolute pro, but the dude just puts in the work. It is hard to make those features that good. They stick out. We've been doing features on ESPN since SportsCenter blew up. The feature has been a staple of this network, and no one, not a single person, has done it as well as that guy.
He's the greatest of all time.
That guy's gotten my wife to cry about stories she hadn't known about multiple times.
Same with mine. I do wonder who takes over and voices the Masters promos now. I'm being dead serious about this. These things are very, I take them very, very seriously. And Rinaldi is really as good as it gets. Who does the storytelling around here now? Is it Shap? Who is it?
Probably Wright Thompson's voice work is gonna get some extra reps.
Help me understand something that I read, because the headlines, because people were shocked by this, people in our community in sports were shocked by this move. When I saw the headlines, I thought to myself, and I'm wondering what you guys think on this, because the headlines were ESPN star Tom Rinaldi. And I think of him as a star, and I think of him as the unprecedented storyteller at our place. But I didn't think that the audience might think of him as a star. To me, at ESPN, the stars are Van Pelt, are Stephen A. In a different time, it was Stuart Scott, it was Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann.
Right.
That's what I Chris think of. Berman. I never think of the reporters as stars. I guess Adam Schefter and Woj have to be considered stars, but what is your tier on this? Like, who's a star, who's not a star? Because while I was reading it and I was saying, yes, he is a star in our industry, I didn't think that the audience necessarily would think that.
Oh, I think Rinaldi is a star. I think Tim Kurkjian is a star. I really do. Kirk Herbstreit, Chris Fowler are stars.
So how many stars?
Game Day crew, probably, for the most part. Yeah, those guys.
So how many stars are there? Because I do think there are different categories, and I don't tend to think of the reporters. I might have this wrong. The reporters. You might be right that Chris Mortensen and Adam Schefter and Woj and all these guys, they have to be considered stars. I simply don't think of reporters as stars, because reporters are trying generally to avoid stardom.
If I were to do, like, by tiers, I would say tier one stars at ESPN, and we could add to this, but I would certainly say that Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and Mike Greenberg are considered tier one stars at ESPN, right?
I think Rinaldi is a star in that I never thought of him that way. And now that he's moving networks,
You took him for granted, Mike.
I think, wow, this is a huge signing for Fox, which, say what you will about their strategy when it comes to content, Big Noon Saturday is making inroads when it comes to putting on good college football. They just had really bad COVID luck this year, but that's a good program. Urban Meyer's a really good analyst. Now you bring in a guy like, what I look forward to the most when I watch College Game Day is Lee Corso putting on a mascot head and the feature. Yeah. Now you're telling me the best person to ever do the feature is going to another network. I'm going to watch the other network to see that feature. The Tyler Trent stuff that he did with Purdue, flat out, is the greatest feature I've ever seen done on television.
Not sports television.
Certainly sports television.
He's amazing, man.
Yeah, like I've seen hype videos like for trailers, I guess. I mean, get me excited to watch something that are very well
But
done.
You're talking about just sports television. You're not saying it's the greatest feature you've ever seen of sports, any kind, inside or outside of sports.
Maybe.
While watching and you get emotional. I'm curious about this because help me understand this part of the landscape, because I'm starting out from an ignorant point on this. Is Big Noon Saturday making enough inroads here that what is happening is a division, the country, between what you associate with the West Coast, which is Fox, and that ESPN, and I don't know what's being reported here, so please, if I'm being ignorant, let me know. Isn't ESPN trying to do stuff with the SEC in a way that's aggressive?
They're
that's
the home of the SEC.
Yeah, ESPN signed a deal. The CBS deal is now going over there. And if you watch College Game Day, there is a very clear regional bias. Put it to you this way. I'm a Miami Hurricanes fan. College Game Day is out at Auburn, Alabama for like the millionth time, even though Auburn isn't any good. Big Noon Saturday. In this instance, I'll use the Miami Hurricanes as an example, is at Miami, North Carolina. I'm going to watch that broadcast to see my team. They cater to the Big Ten. The Big Ten game of the week or the Pac-12 game of the week, they are going to be featured. That I'm inclined to watch it. If I'm an Ohio State fan, I'm going to watch them previewing the Ohio State game with my former head coach over there doing great analysis. So they have a regional strategy that I think works.
What can you tell me about the business, because I don't know, and again, I'm asking questions that come out of ignorance. What can you tell me about the business that ESPN is shaving costs and Fox is picking them up? This is a terrible media time. This is a terrible time for the economy, for making stuff. I read an article in the New York Times, and you should check it out, about just how much sports has hemorrhaged money, how the business of sports has hemorrhaged money. And so what you see happening in terms of people leaving wherever, Place X and Tom Rinaldi leaving, why is Fox able to pick up whatever the cost is on that while ESPN is letting go of people? I asked that question not having any idea what the answer is. I don't know. I thought that when we entered the pandemic that ESPN is the great white shark of no natural known predators. And Fox has been pretty consistently as a business plan, and it's been disappointing to me to watch it, just sort of copycatting, hey, who's ESPN making? Let's grab that name because it's been made a name over there, whether it's Jonathan Vilma, whether it's Skip Bayless, whether it's Colin Cowherd, Marcellus Wiley. They've done precious little of developing their own talent into names that rival the names I'm mentioning.
Shannon Sharp doing the movie segment with us.
Well, that is not one of them. Shannon Sharp and Nick Wright are two stars that they've created. I don't know necessarily off the top of my head if there is a third. There are a lot of ESPN people over there because Urban Meyer is also one of them. So I asked the question to you, on terms of their business philosophy, I don't know what Rinaldi is getting paid. I don't know what the incentive was, but why is Fox able to afford him or let him, if indeed that's a financial move? Maybe Rinaldi wanted to change after a bunch of years.
Speaking from someone that's a little close to it now, because I think even our situation sort of plays into it, I think ESPN is now prioritizing live game rights. And that makes sure, that's making sure that your partners are happy. That's making sure that the content that you put out makes those partners happy. And it's the industry changes. Before, it was all the best talent goes to ESPN. ESPN was buying up all the best talent. You wanted great opinions, you knew where to go. And now the priorities have shifted a little bit. You can't get every single game right, even though ESPN is certainly trying. And
doesn't Rinaldi address some of that, though, in terms of their partners with college football? They're partners with the NCAA.
But if you're going game rights, though, then what you're going, the next step on that is if you're just focusing on game rights, then you're quietly getting rid of the journalism. That ESPN always, this was an interesting...
They're telling you the journalism is not as important as it once was. Games are more important.
No, but it's never been those.
Okay, but Dan, there were times where people like Tom Rinaldi were luxuries to have. The games are what's important, right?
Agreed, but ESPN for a long time, right? Streaming has changed a great deal, and ESPN for a long time didn't have to, but chose to embrace the idea of journalism. Hired sports writers. Chris Mortensen, sports writer. Tim Kirkchin, sports writer. John Clayton, sports writer. All the guys on the debate shows, they began as sports writers. Journalism, journalism. Let's have journalism credentials. The original advent of argument television, PTI and Around the Horn, was borrowing the credibility of newsrooms so on television, ESPN could get into the journalism business beyond Bob Lee and beyond 30 for 30s and have on their TV screens Washington Post, Denver Post, Miami Herald, New York. Well, the New York Times wouldn't let people do that. But because the New York Times saw that in making us, the journalists, stars, you're making newspapers irrelevant. So the New York Times wouldn't allow their people to be on any of these shows. And we ran toward the cotton candy money, and ESPN kept throwing it out because, holy shit, there's money in newspapers. We can get on television. There's glory. And so ESPN got into the journalism business, even though ESPN, the letters, don't have a J in it. And you associated it with journalism. And you associated it with journalism in a way that even though there were partnerships with the leagues that created conflicts, there was journalism being done. There hasn't been an announcement. I didn't see a memo anywhere that we're getting out of the journalism business. I don't know if the pandemic has sort of fast-forwarded everything so it goes so fast to the NFL and SEC and live sports rights, but it certainly appears when people are leaving that journalists are leaving.
I heard a podcast that Richard Deitch did that's sort of focusing on, well, ESPN used to be the hub for journalists, and now it seems as though they're moving in a different direction. But one could argue it's actually a market correction. They probably invested in that way too much and created some ego monsters out there, and in turn did help, even though it was probably on the way there, help fast track the death of the newspaper industry.
When you have that cable subscription model, it's so easy for so long just to keep hiring, and less people are purchasing cable the traditional way and absorbing and consuming ESPN the traditional way, that it makes people like Tom Rinaldi end our show. It doesn't make us nearly as valuable when you make the value and the emphasis on the games, because that's what's important. The games are what's important. I don't go out of my way. I'm sorry. If I stumble across Rinaldi during the pregame show, then I stumble across him. But I know when that game's going to start, and I know if I want to watch that game, what time to be
but
on
it's
my couch.
To me, it's an interesting conversation, because what you're talking about with the specifics of Rinaldi is, does business model X have room and time and space and money and interest for above average content? Like, does it have a value? When you say less valuable, does it have a value? And Stugatz is telling you here, no, it does not. It does not have a value.
I don't think it does.
I'm tuning in for the game. But you realize that you are then saying, Stugatz, you don't have value, which I doubt is the way that's going to go in negotiations.
I have tremendous value. I mean,
I think it's a massive get for Fox. And by the way, I think what ESPN is doing on the television side is the right call. Separate audio and digital audio for a second. I think they're doing the right thing when it comes to their television strategy now, which is get you to watch the game because it's the only thing that's rating right now. Live TV events. That's why, even though the ratings are declining year
only
over year.
Only thing rating, and this is huge, it is central to the business model. Only thing that you have to appointment view. That you do not watch, the majority of people, some people watch it on the treadmill later and ask no one to tell them what happened in the game, but you have to watch it live. Live television is just about dead.
Yeah. Except for play-by-play.
You can kind of get what, like First Take, for example. A large chunk of First Take is getting you to watch the UFC card, getting you to watch the boxing card, talking about the big college football game that's going to be on ABC.
All commercials. You've heard me say before that we all exist as infomercials to get you to the next sporting event.
Exactly. All my on-air content is going to be devised in a way that'll get you to watch the big game. And then we'll talk about the big game, but mostly get you to watch the next big game. No one in our industry gets me more invested in wanting to watch a game than Tom Rinaldi.
Than making it human.
Yeah, because I watched every snap of that Ohio State-Purdue game because I wanted Purdue to win that game so badly for Tyler. My wife got emotional when Purdue wins that game. And if you want someone that fits in that business model of getting you invested, Tom Rinaldi would be the first hire I'd make.
Dan, this is all I'm trying to say. In 2020, is College Game Day great? Yes. Would ESPN survive without it? 1,000%.
Okay, but ESPN...
Would ESPN survive without Michigan, Ohio State? I don't know, especially when you have declining cable subscriptions.
Stugatz, you that's just it. Saw during a pandemic, I appreciate your that's it on all complicated matters. You just saw during pandemic that there were no sports, and you saw the way the industry took a hit. Obviously, the thing that carries everything is the investment in live sports. But I want to attack what it is that Mike's saying, and I want to get to Billy and Chris and how they felt about the Rinaldi firing. Roy, as you, I want to hear from you as well on this because, I'm sorry, not firing, changing positions. I didn't mean to say that. Can you guys tell me, as I covered the Marlins the first year and in the spirit of what it is we're talking about, my job was basically to write story after story that was humanizing the player, that would make the first person going to the first game care about so-and-so and so-and-so because Chuck Carr's wife had had a lot of miscarriages, because this player had a human story that connected in some ways the way that Tom Rinaldi would make Mike, for no good reason other than that, connect with Purdue football. Roy, how did you experience? Were you as shocked? Was anyone on the Zoom call not shocked when they heard that Rinaldi was leaving for Fox?
Yeah, I was absolutely taken aback. I did not see that one coming at all. I was really surprised that he was leaving.
Chris?
You know, honestly, with everything going on in this industry, it was not like shocking. I can believe it. And maybe he wants to shift his career. Maybe he's done with the sappy stuff. Maybe he wants to be like Skip Bayless and like be an opinion guy. And he's like, you know what? I can't do that here.
But so maybe he will have a larger part. Maybe that's something that Tom wanted, just a larger part in a pregame show. Hey, I'll still do the storytelling, but I want a larger part in a pregame show. Maybe there's something there.
I wasn't that shocked by it. In this pandemic, in this economy, money talks, man. And when Fox floats a number that you can't refuse, I mean, the deal's done.
I didn't really react. Were we supposed to be sad or feel something? Like, I don't want to, you know, say like, oh, I don't care. But I found out this morning, like, it didn't stop my world. I was like, oh, Tom Rinaldi's going to Fox. At first I saw he was trending. I was like, uh-oh, what's going on here? Right. And then I clicked and I'm like, oh, he signed somewhere else. Okay, good for Tom. Good for him.
I would describe it as earth-shattering for me.
But Billy, what, like, who would be the guy? If Tim Kurkjian left, you'd be shocked, no?
Yes.
Yeah, when right. Peter Gammons left, I was shocked.
Okay, I think that's how a lot of people feel about
what's
Tom
the
Rinaldi.
Top of the list for you, Billy? What you would get up in the morning and I would inform you, Billy, you're not going to believe this, but this person is leaving.
Us.
I thought that's what he was going to do, Chris. I thought when you left, Dan, when that was the thing.
No offense to Tom, but I have my own things going on right now, okay, Tom? Like, good for you, bad for you, I don't care. I have my own instability at the moment, all right, Tom? Sorry that it's not all about you today.
That's what I was saying.
Perfect.